Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Tulsa Opera's next production is a bit unusual in a number of ways. Frank Lesser's musical/operetta, The Most Happy Fellow, has been called Broadway's most operatic musical. And it's an amalgam of the type of songs you might expect to hear in Lesser's musical comedy, Guys and Dolls, on one hand, and romantic, sentimental melodies that one would expect to hear in an early 20th century operetta in the other, with a plot that combines the usual devices used in both musical comedies and comic opera. In a nutshell, The Most Happy Fellow is Tony, an older Italian grape farmer in Napa Valley who's had a mail-order love affair with Rosabella, a younger, beautiful waitress in San Francisco. Finally, they are to meet. But Tony has sent a picture of Joe, his younger foreman, and passed it off as himself. Well, you can imagine where it goes from there. But as the musical title suggests, all ends well for The Most Happy Fellow. Portraying Tony is Kim Josephson, an international opera star with Oklahoma ties. So he grew up in Oklahoma, and he has been one of opera's most admired baritones. He's appeared at the Metropolitan Opera, where he made his debut in 1991, in over 29 roles and 250 performances. He's also appeared at all the major U.S. companies. He's appeared in 4 television broadcasts from the Metropolitan Opera, which are all available on video recording, La Fanciulla d'Ovest, Arabella, Carmen, and Billy Budd. He's also was in the world premiere production of William Bolcom's A View from the Bridge, which is available now from New World Records. He's also in the world premiere production of Andre Previn's Brief Encounter, which was just released on CD by Deutsche Grammophon. And most recently, he was involved in the world premiere of Stephen Schwartz's first opera, Seance on a Wet Afternoon, for Opera Santa Barbara and New York City Opera. He's our guest today on Studio Tulsa to talk about Tony and The Most Happy Fellow, which opens Saturday night at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center. Kim Josephson, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
This is a little different fare for Tulsa Opera. I mean, they have done operettas before, and really it's hard to classify what this piece exactly is. Frank Lesser wrote a really amazing, interesting piece that certainly has elements of an operetta, but then you hear things like Standing on the Corner or Dallas, and you're saying, I'm in Guys and Dolls.
Exactly. What is this? You know, I think it was referred to as a Broadway opera.
A Broadway opera.
Which I like very much. And, you know, when you really start to think about it, it may be the most operatic of all musicals. And that's exciting. And so rather than think about putting a little label on it, just realize it's going to be one crazy good night of theater.
Right. And in this particular piece, it probably stands alone, doesn't it? From just
really
about
does.
Everything. I mean, there's nobody's ever attempted anything like this since Lesser, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly Sondheim and Les Mis are through sung, but they're very different animals in this because you're really an operatic role in this piece, and then you have other people who are singing almost like musical comedy roles.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's right.
Well, I know you've been very attracted to this role for a long time, and now you're finally getting a chance to sing it. What attracted to you this thing in the first place?
Well, when I was in New York, I had the opportunity to work with a famous baritone, Louis Quillico. And Louis was a famous Rigoletto at the Metropolitan. He was there for many years. And I saw his last Rigoletto at the Met. And when he left the Met, he went across the street to the New York City Opera and actually sang Most Happy Fella. And so I got to see him do it there, you know. And what's funny about it is, first of all, it's a great show. It's a great sing, and it's a great character. And he's so warm and so open and so honest and full of love. So that's what the musical is all about. But when Louis did it, it just made it special to me. And I always thought, you know, well, you know, sometime when I'm an older guy, you know, I'd love to sing Most Happy Fella. And it's worked out that I can come and do it, you know, here at home in Oklahoma and get it done.
Yeah. You know, and I would think it's a big change of pace for most of your baritone roles. You're playing Scarpias and villains and sidekicks a lot of times.
Absolutely. And I get the girl. That never happens.
I think I read one interview that says, you know, what's your most memorable onstage kisses? It's like, I'm a baritone. We don't get kisses.
We don't get kisses. That's right.
Well, this is a different vehicle for you as a baritone. I mean, it's the music is there, but I'm just saying the whole idea of a leading role, and it's this character of this very open-hearted, wonderful guy.
Exactly. And the fun for me, too, is to play with the dialogues. You know, being primarily an opera singer all these years, you're always controlled by the bar lines, the meter. Everything has to fit into the bar. And here, the dialogue has its own pace, and but the meter is really drawn by the emotion. And so you're able to embrace a certain freedom and to follow the electricity that's on the stage and the music that's in the words, and that's very exciting. And, you know, as a consequence, it's like I find myself now wanting to play around with the idea of maybe doing some straight theater.
Really?
Absolutely. You know, and so, totally free of the music, you know, which would be just connected to the words and the emotion of the moment.
Now, I'm not really all that familiar with Most Happy Fellow. I know some of the music, but are there just straight dialogue sections,
yes,
or are they underscored dialogue?
Well, both.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's very interesting. Lesser wrote a lot of the stuff originally in a recitative fashion, accompanied recitative fashion. And then some of it was cut down to straight dialogue. And then there are accompanied recitative sections left in. So you have all of this kind of play. And it's, as always, the music underscores the emotions of the moment and takes you back with themes and motifs that identify what he's thinking about or what the characters are thinking or this kind of thing. And it's so informative and amplified. It's really interesting.
Now, is it recitative or is it more like underscored dialogue where, you know, the orchestra is accompanying you, but they're
more
waiting
like
on you?
Well, no, you're singing, so it's, you know,
you are
accompanied
singing.
Recitative, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. But I think it's interesting that you're really into the straight dialogue part of it.
Oh, yeah, that's
I guess because for an opera singer, even if you are sort of doing a recitative, you really are.
You're bound by the bars.
Yeah.
You know, at some level, you have to find a way to make the bar lines natural. But when you finally get the chance to just, you know, leave it all behind, and then the only music is the music of the language, the words, the intention, and where that goes, that gets exciting to me.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you're almost ready to embark on something else. And I know that opera singers, you do a great amount of work on your character and just understanding who that person is, just like an actor. I mean, you're doing as much or more because you have to put it in the confines of the singing form.
Well, the music informs the dramatic choice all the time. It's like, what is the music saying? Why did the composer choose, you know, to modulate to a different key here? What's he doing with the tonal construct, and how does that inform what's being said, or what is his intention?
That's really actually an additional tool compared to a straight actor.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, because you have this musical accompaniment. You have the underscoring going on.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like in a film, you have the underscoring, which comes after the performance.
Exactly.
But here it helps you make choices.
Absolutely. And now, see, you know, I did the world premiere of View from the Bridge, the Bill Bolcom opera, the Arthur Miller play.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now it interests me. I think I would be very excited about doing Eddie Carbone without the music. And of course, my experience in the opera would inform the choices I would make just from the printed page.
Yeah. Well, we're looking forward to The Most Happy Fellow by Frank Lesser. This is a really interesting piece. It's written in the mid-50s, and it's just this interesting amalgam piece. And of course, your role, you're singing like Mario Lanza, you know. All these great, you know, I mean, or Ezio Pinza, that's who I was thinking of.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a real operatic role.
It is.
In your case.
It is. And you know, one of the happy things about The Most Happy Fella is that he gets to do it in an Italian accent. And so, you know, we are given a little latitude with the vowels and consonants to make it sound so Italian. So it really, it's like singing an opera role.
Now, you have a number of arias or songs in this show. Which one is the one you look forward to most? Is there one in particular?
Well, you know, the thing is, so much of the music is so gorgeous. And it's the way he builds the character of Tony is to let you feel his heart from the very beginning. And when he finds the music, the love music that he will use later in the piece to ask Rosabella to marry him, well, that's such a great piece of music, although it's not a real aria, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the insecurity and the love of a Rosabella. That's such a great aria. But my favorite, has to be the last act aria, the Mama Mama, Up in Heaven, How You Like My Girl. And it is so sweet as he sits there and he talks to his mother who's passed. And he connects to her, and he's so in love that the big lines in it are like, I feel so young, and I feel so strong, and I feel so smart. And it's that's my favorite.
Of course, this character of Tony, he's a humble person. He really is.
Well, yeah. And I think that's the beauty of him. He's just so big and
open-hearted.
Generous and open-hearted. That's what the piece is about. It's a love story, you know, and it's at a perfect time of year, huh? We just finished Valentine's Day, and it's all about this. It's just about love, and it's so warm and make people feel good.
It's kind of interesting because it kind of combines your typical opera plot lines with musical theater plot lines,
Absolutely.
Too. I mean, it really is amalgam in every single way.
And some of those big musical numbers are just outrageous. Of course, you know, like you said, Standing on the Corner, but Dallas is or the Sposalizio. We have the dancers and the things that are going on in this show are phenomenal. It's just exciting. The stage is just, you know, vibrant, alive with energy. It's a great show.
Now, have you ever done a musical?
No, this is my first one.
Really? And so you've never done the sort of eight shows a week?
No, never.
You know, and I don't think this is one that lends itself.
By the grace of God.
Well, I was just thinking, you know, you're doing an operatic sort of schedule rather than a musical schedule. I wonder what the challenges of doing it like actually a musical would have been.
Golly, I can't imagine, you know. But, you know, the pack is so big. Of course, you know, you're not 2,000 seat auditorium, you know.
You're singing, you have to sing to the rafters.
It's not like Broadway, the small little houses over there, right?
Yeah. Well, let's hear a little music from The Most Happy Fellow. Let's hear the Mama song that you were talking about. Let's hear music from The Most Happy Fellow, which opens Saturday night and continues next week at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center. My guest today is baritone Kim Josephson, who portrays Tony, the Most Happy Fellow. Here's music from the operetta. Oh!
You eye and shake your hand, hello. I'm a scared you slap on my face and you go.
That's music from Tulsa Opera. They'll be presenting The Most Happy Fellow by Frank Lesser. My guest today portrays the lead character, Tony Kim Josephson, who's had a great career. He's now teaching at the University of Oklahoma. And continues to have a great career. I shouldn't say it in the past tense because you're busy doing premieres left and right. You're teaching a new generation of students at the University of Oklahoma. How did you come to Oklahoma? Do you have connections to Oklahoma at all?
Well, I actually do. I actually went to first and second grade at Lanier Elementary School.
Right here in Tulsa?
In Tulsa.
Oh, I
didn't
know that.
And my uncle, Al Morgan, was instrumental in building the B.F. Goodrich plant in Miami. And I actually had a ranch outside of Anita, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
So I love Oklahoma.
So you've always had those connections, but you grew up for the most part in Houston.
That's right.
And that's how you discovered opera.
That's right. I was in college, and I was a music education major, an instrumentalist, and I decided I'd like to take a few voice lessons. And so halfway through college, I had some free time for electives, took some lessons, and they were like, hey, kid, you got to sing. So they said, you need to go down and join the Houston Opera. And so I got in the chorus down there, and before long I was would do some bit parts, and then there was Texas Opera Theater and smaller roles, and, well, the rest is history.
I guess once you began singing, that became the focus.
Oh, absolutely. It was instrumental in that was Peter Grimes. John Vickers came to Houston, and we did that together. And I was like, if this is what opera is, this is what I'd like to do.
And you've certainly done it over the years. How many roles at the Metropolitan Opera?
Well, I sang 29 roles at the Met, over 250 performances.
Wow. You know, the Metropolitan Opera does have, because of the broadcast and because it's in New York, it has this cachet. What's it like to sing on the stage?
Well, for an American singer, come on. There is.
It's your La Scala. It's our La Scala.
It's where you want to be. It's your dream. And you. The truth is, I had a couple of great contracts in Europe. And when I sang for the Met, they offered me a small role in Fanciulla del West, a new production with Placido Domingo and Cheryl Milnes. And
this is a famous production, too.
Oh, it's fantastic, the Giancarlo Del Monaco production. And they asked me to do Little Jim Larkins. And I canceled everything so I could go and be at the Metropolitan because that was my dream. And it couldn't have gone better. The first year that I was given the opportunity to sing some of the greatest roles in the literature. I sang Marcello, I sang Germont, I sang Sonora and Fanciulla, and that was recorded for PBS. So that was the beginning of a beautiful relationship.
What do you remember of that first performance? Was it a sort of a knee-knocking performance? I mean, or were you leery about your debut? What do you remember about the debut?
The debut was October the 10th, 1991, and I really remember everything about it. It was interesting, the young man who's passed away now, his name was Richard Vernon, but he was with me in my debut at the Houston Grand Opera back in 1976, and he was on stage with me at the Metropolitan for my debut at the Met in 1991. Can you imagine?
Wow.
And I followed him on stage in Houston, and I followed him on stage at the Met. And it was just a dream come true. I always wanted to sing there.
You know, you talk to baseball players for the first time they're at Yankee Stadium, you know, it's like there's a little extra sweat, a little extra, nerves going on until they get up and actually do it. Do you remember nerves, or were you just excited to be there?
Well, I was just excited to be there. I was just thrilled. I was on fire. What can I tell you? It's like, give me the stage. Give me the stage. I can't wait to be there. And of course, you're nervous. It's like, come on. The house is 4,000 seats, and the critics are all there. It's New York. You live or die with every time you take the stage.
Yeah. Well, over the course of your career, you've had the opportunity to work with a number of great composers in the opening premieres. And recently, just in the last year or two, you had a premiere of the first opera. He would say it's his first major opera. He did one in college. But Stephen Schwartz, who did Wicked and Godspell, he wrote an opera.
That's right, Seance on a Wet Afternoon.
Yeah, and it's had a couple performances at New York City Opera, and I guess it premiered at Santa Barbara Opera.
That's right.
And what was it like to work and you've worked with several composers, Andre Previn, A Brief Encounter, and A View from the Bridge, William Bolcom. What's it like when you're working with, the composer is in the theater, and you have a chance to sort of hone your character with
there
that composer?
There is nothing more exciting for an artist than to work with a composer and create a work. It was, and every one of those experiences is totally different, and it would probably take days to talk about it. But it's just like pouring water on your creative spirit. It just you just blossom. You're given such liberty, and you're there to ask the questions and to hear it straight from the horse's mouth. I always tease when I'm doing Rigoletto or Traviata. Some of these things. I'm like, well, why would you make that choice? Well, I have Verdi's phone number, and I just call him. But with these living composers, you actually can talk to them about some little something that they write in the piece. What did you intend? What were you thinking? What did you mean? Why did you choose? And when you can get that sort of feedback and you see it in their eyes if you're right on or if you're just in line with their intention, and that's what you're trying to do. Listen, they're the genius, and we're just trying to create what they intend. So we serve the art in that way, and to be with them, what can I tell you? Stephen Schwartz is a dream, We worked through Seance, and we talked about the choices, and he would accommodate me in any way. Bill Bolcom, same way. It was like, Kim, how can I help you make this better? What do we need here? It was fantastic. The Previn piece was especially interesting because we were coming even down to the last minute changing things. So it's a little bit like singing a Rossini opera, you know, where they talk about he would write the aria and just hand it to the singer and say, sing it. Well, we would make some changes. And it was like, now carry that home and we'll do it tomorrow. We'll stage it tomorrow. So your adrenaline is just like, you know,
so he was
electricity.
He was a real tinker with his piece, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well,
I guess they all are
to
an extent.
They all do to a certain extent because it's they're
you only have one chance to get it right. There's no out-of-town tryout.
That's right. And there's it's so unmerciful for the art form. You know, the critics' thumbs up, thumbs down makes all the difference, and it's sad. I mean, for example, with Seance, it's a great piece of theater. The people who come and see the show stand and cheer. But who knows when I'll get to do it again? Or, well, perhaps it's past for me.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, it was an honor to perform it, and I hope it lives. Brief Encounter's a great show. Very interesting. And The View has done really well. We premiered it at Chicago. We sang it at the Met, then the Kennedy Center. We just finished doing it at the Rome Opera, you know. And it's being done in colleges even now, so that's exciting. But there's nothing like working with a living composer.
When you have like Stephen Schwartz, who, you know, has done so many musicals, is the way of working much different from creating an opera as opposed to a piece of musical theater?
Well, you know, interesting enough, the librettist for the Previn piece was John Caird. Bill worked with Arthur Miller and Arnold Weinstein on the text for A View. And Stephen, I mean, there is no one more concerned about the poetry and the scansion and the proper delivery of the words in meter than Stephen Schwartz. And as a consequence, it's as if you're just being given just exactly what you need to do what you need to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it sounds like from your viewpoint, these were really great performances and successful.
Oh, man, absolutely. And so worth doing. You know, the thing of it is, it's such an expensive art form, but it has the potential of being the most riveting theater that you can possibly imagine if you can lend yourself to it. And that's what's so good about it. I've been so fortunate that I've gotten to sing in English all these times. You know, I love our language, and I love our hearts. And when music touches your heart, makes you feel things, makes you go places that maybe your regular life doesn't give you the opportunity to go. Well, you can go there in the theater. And these composers, librettists, these poets, these souls, creative souls, have given us, just treasures. And to be a part of it and just to be able to share in that emotional experience is a thrill.
My guest today is Kim Josephson. He's a baritone opera singer, performed at the Met over 240, maybe 250 now. You're up to, you
right.
Had the Philip Glass opera recently.
That's right.
Grata. And he is portraying Tony in The Most Happy Fella for Tulsa Opera by Frank Lesser this weekend, this Saturday, and then again next Friday and Sunday at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center. Well, you've been teaching at the University of Oklahoma here recently in the last few years.
Yes.
Have you always been a teacher, even when you were sort of on the road, or is this a new experience for you?
Well, you know, this is an exciting thing. My daughter is the one who sort of pushed me into teaching. My daughter is Kiri Dionorine. She's married. And little Kiri came to me on the ranch in Veneta. And she says to me, she says, my daddy sings at the Metropolitan Opera, and he won't teach me to sing. Well, Rich, you know, guilt works really well in our house. Right? And I was like, baby, are you serious? Do you really want this? And she looked right at me. She said, it's my dream, too. Well, so we began our studies. And so she was my little first student, okay?
And that worked well?
Oh, yeah. It was great. Well, first, we had a really close relationship, and she really trusts me. So if I told her what to do, she did it. I mean, I was so unwilling to push her into a career that's so filled with struggle and rejection and heartache. You know, I mean, it is. I mean, it looks like—
That's a big part of the teacher's process, is getting your students prepared for that, too.
Well, absolutely. And it's like when it's your little girl, Rich, you don't want that to happen, you know. But she said, it's my dream, too. And so I said, okay, then we'll be serious. Let's go at it. And, I mean, you know, we struggle through some tears and some, you know, it's like, why can't you wear your daddy hat? No, this is the teacher hat, and
right. This
you must do. And but she embraced it. And, I mean, she's gone on. She won the Met auditions a couple of years ago. She's now in the Chicago Lyric Young Artist Program. And she just did Sophie and Werther to glowing reviews and Opera News and everything. And she's making her debut at the Metropolitan next year.
Oh,
in Prince Igor.
You are obviously a proud papa.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
And so, but the point of it is, that, well, how does this lead to teaching? Well, what happens is you start realizing, hey, all the people, no one makes it by themselves. They need help. They need to be shown what to do. They need to be shown how to do it. They need to know who to do it for. You know, and just what's absolutely necessary. And you look around and you realize, hey, the people that helped you are all gone. Now, I mean, when I went to New York, here's the story. I was working for UPS in unloading trucks in the night shift so I could make $8 an hour so that I could audition during the day. Well, when Jerome Hines, the great Metropolitan bass, hired me to cover a little show that he had some singers doing, and found out I'm in the back of a truck, he was like, no, Kim, you got to get out of that truck. Well, he had just created a program called Opera Music Theater International, and he invited me to study in that program. Well, that's what afforded me the opportunity to work with Louis Quillico and Franco Corelli. So I was able to work with these guys for 2 years. 2 years in New York City, right?
Yeah, just absorbing like a sponge.
Oh, absolutely. And the point of it is it's like all of a sudden these guys are all gone, and I'm the bridge to that information. I'm the bridge to that information. When I look at these young singers, I'm singing with all kids here in this cast, this Most Happy Fella. You know, if there's somebody, you know, over 27, I don't know, you know. And they're all so fantastic. And yet when I look at them, that was yesterday for me. That was yesterday. My ragged old face. Who is that guy in the mirror? I don't know. But I sensed in myself a certain responsibility to share what I have garnered from the last generation with the next generation. Listen, my dreams came true. I went up to New York and I did it. So it's like, and now I have the opportunity, thanks to the University of Oklahoma, to help the next generation make their dreams come true too. To be able to share what I can share with those kids, it's an honor.
Yeah, well, we look forward to seeing you on stage this weekend and next in just a beautiful role. It's a wonderful role.
Thank you.
Yeah, Tony and the Most Happy Fella. Kim Josephson, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Rich.
Operatic baritone Kim Josephson speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. He'll portray Tony in The Most Happy Fellow, which gets underway Saturday night at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center. Additional performances next Friday and Sunday. For ticket information, visit the PAC box office at 918-596-7111. We're going to leave you with more music from The Most Happy Fellow. Studio Tulsa is produced by Scott Gregory. I'm Rich Fisher.
Standing on the corner, watching all the girls go.